Welcome to the Danger Room, a place to prepare for the opponents you are yet to face. We discuss strategy and how to level up your game in Marvel Crisis Protocol. We will have our Xavier Protocol segment, some hot takes discussing something new and shiny, and our main topic of the week. We would like to begin by thanking you, the listener, for giving us your time to listen to our opinions of the game. On the podcast, we have Jacob, Sploosh, and myself, Dizzard.
Welcome back to the Danger Room, and today we are joined by the one, the only, Hugo, a.k.a. Huggy Bear, throughout the Discord. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
All right. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little about yourself and how you got into MCP and how you found your way onto our podcast.
Sure. My name's Hugo. I live in Sweden, to be more precise, the southmost part, in a little town called Lund. I work as an editor at a publishing house. I'm a dad. I've been a gamer since 1997, basically, or 2013, but depending on if you count casual or competitive play. I used to play Warhammer Fantasy Battles, and after that, War Machine for 5 years. I went to the WTC. And then when this game was announced, I knew that I had much trust, much faith in the people who were the main developers, Pagani and Chick, from formerly at Privateer Press. I wasn't really a Marvel fan, but I was a fan of a good game. But as I've gotten more and more into it, my wife and I are actually watching MCU stuff basically every other night. And I've been reading up on some comics as well. So gotten really hooked, to say the least.
So the game got you into the Marvel Universe?
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. That's pretty cool. It's normally like the other way around, like, oh, I'm a big Marvel fan, and I saw this game, and I hopped on board. So it's interesting to see like a different roundabout way of going about it.
You also basically just explained or described me too. Like a dad who didn't like Marvel very much, but liked a good game. So they have a lot of similarities there.
Yeah, and it's not a bad thing to like Marvel when you're a dad either.
Oh, no, now my kids are kind of into it. And it's funny because it's really like, I wouldn't say like they hated Marvel, but I feel like I've put them more in that direction than maybe they would have been naturally. When I have no regrets on it. I mean, it's a cool world, but, you know. Kind of funny
something
how that
to works. Have in common.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we're going to go ahead and move on to everybody's favorite segment of the show, being Xavier Protocols. So, Jacob, what do you have for us today?
So, today I'm going to be looking at a few of the stats that came out of the tournaments that were run very successfully. Thanks very much, Norbert. The weekend, we had 22 regular games and 22 Battle Realm games. Now, that's not a massive sample size, so I'm not going to dig into, like, oh, look at this win percentage. But there are a couple of things out of the regular games that came out was the priority win percentage is always interesting. If you get priority, how many of those people will go on to win the game? And it was 12 out of 22, so a 12-10 split, and that's pretty much 50-50. It's like 55%. So that's exactly where we'd expect it to be. Something that was interesting, that's, I don't know whether this is a trend or something, but there was a lot of very high and very low threat games. There were only 6 games between 16 and 18 threat, whereas there were 8 games that were 14 or 15 and another 8 games that were 19 and 20. So I don't know. There maybe is a bit of a trend going towards very low threat, which maybe favors durability of some of the big threat characters. It's much harder to take down a She-Hulk if you're playing a 14 threat game, for example. Or maybe a big sort of combo play where you want to have a big wide lots of characters, or maybe multiple big characters where playing 19 or 20 threat is going to really help you there. So that's something I spotted there. Maybe linked to that is when you look at the most popularly played crises, Demons Downtown was the most popular secure, and the Mutant Extremists Get a Senator, the Senator's one, was the most popular extract. So maybe that's kind of linked to like those high levels of 14 and 19. Again, not a massive data set, so I'm not saying, this is the new thing, but just it's a point of interest. Something that was even more interesting, I thought, was in the Battle Realms. Now, this is the first tournament we've had from this. Just a reminder, the Battle Realms is where you bring a roster of 15 and you pick one, and then your opponent gets to dismiss one, and then you pick two and your opponent gets to dismiss three, and you go on like that. It's slightly more random in the crises as well. You bring five crises and it's randomly dealt one of your crises and one of your opponent's crises to the person picking extracts and one of each to the person picking secures. So it's you have much less control over the crisis. So it's a very different format, and this is the first big event. And again, low sample size, only 22, but something that was almost statistically significant and something that I thought was very interesting. Of the 22 games, 15 of them were won by the player that did not have priority. Now, if you assume that there's a 50-50 split between people with priority, people not with priority, if that's your null hypothesis, the chance of this result coming out is 6.7%. Often when people talk about statistical significance, they want something which has got a chance of less than 5% happening. And so it's not quite statistically significant, but it's very close to being statistically significant. If there were one more game played where the person who got priority lost, then it would be classed as statistically significant on that 5% threshold. Now, different statistics have different thresholds for significance, but 5% is a good sort of benchmark of like, is this worth even thinking about? And we are pretty close to that 5% mark. So I don't know, guys, what do you think? Is there anything about the Battle Realms format that you think particularly stands out, that having priority might be a disadvantage or not having priority might be an advantage?
I guess I'll go first. So you had mentioned this to me earlier prior to the broadcast now, and I had looked up the rules just to see if I could unravel the mystery. And what I came up with is really like, I didn't mention who picks the map side, but other than that, the only thing I noticed that was even remotely significant was just like first priority player picks the first character. I mean, no joke, that's like the only thing. Because like everything else is relatively even. It's like, you know, and then even like the priority player picks first, and then it switches and this other guy picks first, and then it kind of goes back to priority. So I think like the first pick is like the only like significant thing. I mean, the priority player gets to pick if they want to do some secures or extracts, but since there's high variance with five of each, I don't think that's anything major. I'm going to backpedal a little, and when you mention the high and low threats, I think that that's just something I would expect, because really when you go to like 14 or 19 threat, you're just stress testing the opponent's ability to make a 15 character list, because, you know, we've talked about this, but you know, you're trying to like ban like awkward numbers, right? And if you're forcing someone to build a list at 14 or 19, it gets awkward, because like if you ban like all their expensive characters, then they maybe can't field affiliated at 19. And if you, you know, get rid of their cheap characters, they might not be able to play properly at 14, or even on 14, you ban expensive characters that could mess them up pretty bad. Like you said, She-Hulk would be really good. So I just, on the format as a whole, I think that that's why the threat thing was relevant, is people probably trying to game the system. However, I got to say, as my final thought here, when I found out Pat won his event, I realized something. In a situation where you're doing like a science experiment, you'd maybe assume that every player is like roughly the same ability or whatever, or it would even out over enough rounds. But when you have players like with the caliber of Pat, it's possible Pat just lost priority three times and just beat his opponents anyway. So maybe there's a weird outlier there. I don't know if you...
It's funny you mention it, because Pat was responsible for two of the seven wins with priority. So if anything, he's skewing the numbers the other way. So
so much for that theory then. I mean, I don't know what other caliber or who was in the event. I just happened to notice that someone said Pat won. So I was like, oh, well, maybe Pat skewed this thing, you know, but
maybe he skewed it the other way.
I mean, just did at first, I would say, Well, hold on. First, I would just say, did I miss anything with the who's got an advantage? It seems to me like the first pick may be like the only differential. And is that really enough? I don't know. It's weird. That's all I got.
I mean, maybe it is, because your first pick telegraphs a lot. Let's say my first pick is Red Skull. If I'm picking Red Skull, it's like I'm playing Cabal in this crisis. And then you can go, huh, okay, cool. Well, I've brought these three different affiliations, and I can pick the affiliation that I think is going to best play into Cabal. Maybe that is a big deal?
I feel like that comes down to the strategy of playing that, because for me, my first pick would not be my leader. It would be somebody who is pretty widespread, like, let's say, Valkyrie.
It's really interesting, the psychology of how you go about building, isn't it? And I think you're right. That's probably kind of like next level Battle Realms way of doing things. Mm-hmm. In the going for someone, I was messing around with Battle Realms format and having like a Wakanda Web Warriors thing. And then picking Black Panther first, and people immediately would like, okay, I ban Okoye. And I'm like, great. Now I'm going to take Miles and Gwen. And I'm like, am I going Wakanda or am I going Web Warriors? I think there's picking a generically good character who's good in a number of affiliations, like Valkyrie might be another good example. I suspect she's not quite as powerful, but MODOK would be a great example. Maybe Angela, maybe She-Hulk. There's a number of things you can do which kind of keep your options a bit more open. But maybe
How about this? Let's throw it out there. Of you guys or girls listening to the show, would like to hear an episode focused on our strategies and thoughts around Battle Realm, come join the Discord and leave a comment saying that you'd like an episode about Battle Realm, and we could do a nice deep dive into the strategy behind building the list and how to do the draft portion.
I'm going to say, though, I hear what you're saying, Jacob, about like having a strategy, and maybe there's like a next level strategy that people aren't even really considering yet. However, I think if we have to assume that people are roughly the same skill level, and like, you know, the guy who wins plays against someone else who won, and the next guy who wins plays against the next guy that won. We have to, for the sake of science, I suppose, assume that people are roughly similar skill, and there wasn't some weird, like, I don't know, secret tech sneaking around, because I don't even know, would that skew the numbers? I mean, I still stand by my point that maybe like some really skilled player, or maybe someone who's just really good at Battle Realm, was like, you know, 0-3 with priority roles and just won anyway. You know, I mean, that's certainly a thing that could have happened. But otherwise, we just have to accept the fact that picking first is bad, because it's like the only differential.
Yeah, maybe. Right. I mean, so words of warning, and I tried to caveat them in these terms. This is a small sample size. It's only 22 games. There's a chance that this is just random numbers. So, but it's a definite point of interest, and it's something that I'll be looking at closely if we go into more Battle Realms stuff. If we get more Battle Realms happening, I'm going to be wanting to have a look at that.
I'm also curious if it was collected for this one as far as data goes, and then maybe I'll talk to Norbert and get it to be collected on the next one, is like what characters were banned the most. Because that'll put a perception of players' mindsets of what characters that they don't want to see, because they'll be like, my knee-jerk reaction would be, I'd be willing to bet Valkyrie was the most banned, or Angela.
How about maybe this, though? Okay. You could go down a rabbit hole with this, but what first pick had the worst win rate? What first pick had the best win rate? Something like that.
Yeah.
I hate to harp on this, but like, feel free, anyone that here or later on listening to this, if you see some significant difference between having priority and not having priority, as far as I can tell, the only major factor is who picks first. So knowing the win rate of who gets picked first could be interesting. You know, you guys have any other thoughts on that? Like an actual like thing we could hold on to that says this is a factor?
Pat is the master of Battle Realm currently.
Sure. But apparently he won even with priority, which was apparently difficult. So
it's Pat though. It's Pat.
I'm still going to say I don't enjoy the concept of Battle Realm. I'd be willing to maybe play it a bit for some science, but I think that the fact that people are picking high and low threats is telling me that they're just gaming the system, and I just don't like that at all.
Just a quick clarification, and maybe I wasn't clear on this, that skew to high and low threats was in the standard normal run-of-the-mill tournament. The threats for the Battle Realms were, the most common threats was 18 and then followed by 17. So they were much more where I kind of expect it to be. So maybe I wasn't clear enough about distinguishing those, but those numbers I talked about, the spread, that was in the non-Battle Realm format.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, so the regular games were high and low?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. That could be a meta shift thing.
Yeah, small sample size, something to keep an eye on.
I would say comparing that tournament to how Season 4 League has gone so far is pretty spot on, like mirror comparison. I haven't been playing any middle of the road game. It's pretty much high and low.
Have you been forcing that though, or did your opponent force it?
Well, let's see. My last game I played Wakanda Herbs. And he played Infinity for me, so I guess there's a 17 in there. So yeah, that last one was 17. But me personally, like my roster, I have high and low threat values. Like I'm 15, 16, and then 19 and 20. Like, so me personally, I have the highs and lows in my list. So I'm kind of part of that whole meta shift as well, apparently.
I mean, my game was 17 and 18, which is right in the middle. So I definitely wasn't a part of any anomalies.
Well, that brings us very nicely onto how you did this week in the league.
I don't want to talk about it.
You should start, Desert.
I'll go first. I had a really good game. Gosh, now I feel terrible because I can't remember his name. Luke Flaherty. I had played against him this week, and really nice guy, really good opponent. I played Air Force again, and it was Herbs and Infinity Formula. And I took She-Hulk, Angela, and Thanos without a gem, because I just wanted to see how it would do with that layout. And I'll tell you what, like the combination of the A-Force leadership and Infinity Formula, I had an abundance of power. But he played Guardians, and Ronan just shuts She-Hulk off completely. Like, I think she was the only one that didn't have power because he just kept getting judgment put on her and didn't really have an effective way to get rid of it. So Ronan against She-Hulk is some interesting tech to think about, because if she can't have power, she's not hitting you as hard as she absolutely could be. Not to mention having Star-Lord put in shock on her and disarm being a thing. It was a really sad game during some parts. Almost pulled it out though. I was going for the kill, and I think it was Star-Lord and Drax left at the end of it, and then by the end of it was just Drax, and he had me by like a couple points, and it was just too late in the game. I couldn't kill fast enough to keep up with the points, but it was an interesting one though. It was really good, really well played, really good opponent, and it was again overall really fun game. And I'm still really liking the Thanos, She-Hulk, and Angela play. I think it's a really fun team to go through. I recommend anybody play it, but it's just a fun list to play.
It is.
I'm amused. She-Hulk's a lawyer, and she couldn't handle the judge when he brought a gavel.
Yeah, she got
like out of order. She objection. That works for me. But I like that tech though. That's sweet.
That was your game.
How'd you do, Jacob? Oh, you want me to go? Okay. So I basically, if anyone remembers last time, I basically just won with Spider Infected in three turns. Apparently, that was exactly what happened this next game. Probably the most interesting part of my game was that it turned out my opponent was from my local game store, and I had no idea because his name is like, it's like okay something in the like the tournament thing, and you know, obviously it's an alias and on Discord as well, and so he saw my name and recognized it, but you know, so he's like, hey, it's Keith, and I was like, okay, Keith from the store. I was like, are you serious? So that's just a small world moment, you know, because we're playing like this global tournament, and my second round opponent happens to be a guy I knew. He's a good guy, good game. It's cool to see him again. You know, with COVID we really hadn't talked at all, and we knew each other from playing Expo.
He's a really accomplished player in that, so it was fun.
He also played X-Men. X-Men. It was a mirror. And I mean, honestly, it's not really anything super notable that happened. I just grabbed a lot of spiders and kind of, you know, did the math on three turns to win. And Corvus at one point killed three people in an activation. So that was cool. In days, not killed, but, you know, it was good times. My Corvus actually died, and I had commented if the points were a little more awkward, like if I had missed one point, it might have gone to another round and actually might have turned a bit on me. But luckily that didn't happen, so it's fun. I hate to, because Keith just started playing the game a few months ago. And, I mean, he played well for being pretty new. He's an experienced wargamer. But he joined because of X-Men, and then I felt horrible. Like, sorry, man, I'm about to drop this hired muscle stuff on you, and I guess I'll show you how it works. You know, that's unfortunate, but, you know, it's a tournament. It's competitive, and I got to play to the best of what I can do. So.
Okay, well, I managed to get a win against a really nice opponent. He was playing Web Warriors, and I dropped, I got priority, and wanted to play cubes and have the 3-cube Hulk, although it turns out he had a good counterplay, which, I mean, there was counterplay to his counterplay, but he had a plan for 3-cube Hulk. And after I was going down, I'm going extracts, and I discarded cubes, I had to zag into Spider Infected. So a slightly different strategy, but he didn't have good ways of dealing with Hulk, and I grabbed 4 spiders on 4 characters, and that on 2 extremist points, and he had to leave characters on other extremist points and bring substandard waves in terms of threat comparisons. He was out-threated by my characters, so that I was able to just take him apart a little bit. He had some good plays. He made some nice plays. Maybe work for it, but that setup of picking up 4 spiders on round 1 is just so hard to deal with.
Are you playing Hired Muscle?
I am. Yeah. So that Hulk jumps through a portal for a power, okay. Hired Muscle for a power, and then grabs a spider for a power. So yeah, and that's quite nice. You don't have to use R&D on Hulk because normally you do. I end up playing R&D round 1 most games, but I didn't need to in that setup.
How about this? Here's something we can also talk about is, what was the biggest, struggle, I guess would be a good word, that you had during that game, if any struggle at all?
I think just really communication was the biggest struggle. Just saying, I'm putting this piece here, and there was a thing where, you know, with all the web lines going around, I put Hulk right next to a piece of terrain, thinking that he had to, like, be at a particular angle to be able to get the pull off. And just communicating with your opponent. So we worked through that because he had a different understanding of exactly where we were at, and we talked it through. And then he repositioned so that he got the pull in the end. But just being really clear about communication, that was the biggest struggle I had.
What about you, Spooge? What was the biggest struggle you had in your game?
Having to knock a friend down.
Fair enough.
That's about it.
And then, Huggy, are you participating in this league? I believe you are.
I am, yes.
So how was your week 2?
It was nice. I got my second win in a very, very nice game against the nicest of opponents, namely the Norbert himself. I played A-Force, he played Asgard. We did extremist consoles and cubes. He had Thor, Angela, Enchantress, and Valkyrie, and I had She-Hulk, Angela, Enchantress, and Okoye. He had priority, so he managed to grab the middle cube, which is the swing point of that game. But then a turn later, I had some lucky defensive dice on Enchantress, and then he overextended so that I could both double beam Thor and Angela twice, and Amora's Kiss away the cube from Thor, and then just do 2 or 3 Siren's Calls as well to just spread his team out all over the place. And then from there, it was just a defensive game, me protecting my 5 points against his maximum 4 and just keeping it that way until I won 19-7.
You just reminded me, actually, that the weirdest thing in my game, I had four characters with spiders on and across like three rounds, rounds two, three, four, where they were stopping. And of those 12 dice rolls, only one of them moved. It was like a 0.3% chance of that happening, but that was, you know, taking away a lot of the downside of that extract on that.
It happens.
Yeah, it does. What about you, Dizzard? What was the biggest thing you learned from this week?
I think I already kind of hit on it in a way, because that's Ronan is really rough in a She-Hulk. I tried taking him out super early because I kind of expected it to be an issue. Like, I basically one-rounded him twice. The only attacks he got off were I can't think of the name of it now. His accuser one where he goes and hits you after he's been dazed. But the one attack that he didn't get to do it on was when She-Hulk went and missed him by like one or two health or something like that, and he made her pay for it the rest of the game because could not find a prime time to get rid of that judgment. But I would say, after knowing this, if I get judgment on She-Hulk again, it's definitely worth it just to shake it and use that action too. But honestly, that's probably my biggest learning point from this game was judgment against She-Hulk is really rough.
Are you running climbing gear?
I did, actually, yeah.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I'm just thinking, because it would be, I mean, it'd basically be a stagger if you have to clear it, but maybe climbing gear at least like fixes that a little bit.
I believe I used climbing gear so I could do something else. I think I was trying to get on the point just to get back, caught back up on points.
Because
I had Angela drop her off, and then I waited till his last activation, and he moved somebody else off the point, and then climbing geared back onto the point or something like that. It was basically a little switcheroo. But yeah, Ronan against She-Hulk's interesting, and I'm not a fan. I think that about covers it for the week. But due to the lack of hard spoils that we've had, we're going to be holding off on hot takes this week and get right into this juicy content. So this week, Jacob has invited Huggy Bear to the show, and we're going to take a deep dive into the mind of a Huggy Bear. Jacob, would you like to introduce the topic?
Sure. So I've been seeing Hugo Huggy playing a lot on TTS, and I've had a couple of enjoyable games against him. And I got talking to him about his approach. And there's something, basically, I love spreadsheets, and he told me he had a spreadsheet. And I was like, oh, tell me about it. And he did. And it was really interesting. And it completely, not changed the way I thought about the game, but it made me go back a couple of steps and go, do you know what? There's some fundamentals here that I need to make sure I'm considering every game. So, Huggy, why don't you tell us about your spreadsheet?
Sure. So, as you said, this is more of an approach than a strategy. And to start off, I want to state that this is something that has worked very well for me. I'm not saying it's for everybody, and there are, of course, different approaches. It all started before Christmas when I lost a lot of games. I thought I was getting the hang of the game, and then I was just like, why am I losing to basically every opponent I'm facing? And so I started to analyzing what went wrong in my games, and I found that most of the time it was because I overextended. I went for points that I didn't really need to go for. And so I decided to start calculating what do you actually need to score each round in order to win reliably. As an illustration, I participated in the Santa Claus Clash just before Christmas, and save for one buy, I finished absolute lost in that tournament. And since then, I have won one draft league, one tournament, and I'm undefeated in two leagues.
It's a pretty big change around. So what was the big difference?
The big difference was that I decided on to start practicing what I like to call defensive scoring, which is scoring just enough points to win after a certain number of rounds while taking as few risks as possible. As I see it, there are basically three scoring philosophies in this game. There might be more, but these are the ones I could think of. There's the what I like to call destructive play, which is very significant for attrition lists, like Cabal and Black Order mostly, or even some Thanos lists, where you just try to choose slow crises and just care as little about points as possible and trying to dace and KO as many characters as possible and win, like either by annihilation or by having a lead of 1 point on turn six. And then there's the swing turn approach, where you're sort of looking for a coup de main turn where you get to where you manage to like score a significant number of points to get a big lead and then just maintain that. This is a philosophy that was very dominant in War Machine, where turn one and two is basically just both players positioning, and then someone finds the right time to go in and then just smash a significant part of the opponent's force and grab a lead that that is too big to come back from. And the third one then, the defensive scoring one. My spreadsheet has all the secure crises on one axle and all the extract crises on one axle. So you get all the possible combinations. Then I just started to filling out what is a reasonable amount of points to score turn one, what is a reasonable amount of points to score turn two, and from there, what more do I need to score to win as close as possible so that I don't have to risk going for more points than can be done safely. And then just try to do that when I play. And it has helped me to not overextend. And I find myself in very many situations where I realize that, okay, at this point, I have three activations left, but I carry all the extracts I need. I have all the secures I need. So now I have three activations to actually prepare for a good next round. Because I don't need to chase more points.
I think again, maybe an illustration is really useful here. Let's imagine you're playing on Cosmic Cubes and Extremis. So you have four secure points and five extract points available each round. To win the game, you only actually need to be scoring five VPs each round. If you score five, your opponent can only score four, I mean, apart from Killmonger and Black Order leadership. But there's a couple of ways of getting extra points. But most of the time, if you're scoring five, they're scoring four, and you do that every round, you're going to win. Yes. You don't need to score six or seven. So if
you don't even need to score five every turn. Do I have priority or not?
Let's imagine you don't.
Okay. So then that means that the middle cube is probably going into the hands of the opponent. So that means that the first turn is a reasonable score is 4 points. Or maybe five if I grab the third secure. But four is enough if I think that I later in the game have a good chance of getting one extract of my opponent. If I don't, if I play, for instance, a very controlly Wakanda list with little chance of dacing tanky characters holding the extracts, then I would have to go for the three secures and try to score three secures and the two cubes for three turns. And then the score would be, after the first turn, it would be 5-4 to me. After the second turn, 10-8. After the third turn, 15-12. And after the fourth turn, I actually only need to score 4 points to go to 19-17. You might think that you only need to score 1 point at that time, but I am assuming that my opponent scores max on his end, which means that I still have to score enough for him not to go past me even above 16 points.
So this is sort of relatively uncontroversial. This is kind of like, well obviously. But I think where you took it next was like the next step and going, okay, well, in that case, there's a character over there. They've got 2 health left and they're carrying a cube. Now, I could send one of my characters. They'll take a move action to get there. They'll take an attack action when they're there. And then they'll pick up a cube. And there's none of their friends around them. They're out of, I don't know, Zemo's reroll bubble or Doctor Strange's hoary wisdom aura. So they're out of support. So it's actually pretty likely that somebody's going to come and take that back off them. And that's especially bad if they've already got a cube themselves. I'm putting 2 VPs. I'm taking a VP over to them. And you see a lot of players doing pretty much exactly that. They're going, huh, well, if I get that, I'll score 6. But not thinking that then that leads on to the next turn where you're creating a juicy target with lots of VPs on them. And if they get taken down and they've been overextended, that maybe that's quite likely, and they're going to prioritize that because of the VP gain they're going to get, that might be detrimental to your play. So this kind of conservative scoring, going, I'll score just enough, but not too much, is a real way of improving consistency. It's kind of, a lot of people look for consistency in their dice and dice fixing. This feels like almost VP fixing, to co-opt a phrase.
More or less. Well, sorry?
Oh, no, you're fine. I was just going to say, like, another thing to think about is you're not playing into the attrition game at all, because you're not taking that juicy bait, like, oh, I can get one more point if I just extend myself and maybe I'll get lucky and live. You're not giving them that model that just makes you lose in that attrition game. So it helps you in multiple facets of the game.
I can see it being possible to play an attrition list this way, but then it would, the use of keeping check of the defensive scoring would be helpful to guide you which character is it worth to actually dace at this point. So it helps, at least it helps me to make choices. Where is it relevant? Where is the most relevant activation and where is the least relevant activation? What characters can I even afford to have daced by my opponent? And it won't affect my game plan. It might even help my game plan because it might swing priority to me.
I think actually it might be more important for attrition lists, because you've got a kind of a two things you're trying to balance with your attrition list. You're not often, they sacrifice early VPs with the idea that we're going to get an attrition advantage, which is going to lead to sort of round 4, round 5 VPs, or maybe even round 6, and that's where you're going to swing it back. Not many games actually end up in Wipeout. A couple of seasons ago, we got stats on that, and it was only about 7% of games go to board wipe. So yeah. Most games don't, even if you have an attrition focus. You still win by VPs. So going, right, well, round 1, I know I'm only going to be sitting on this one secure, and we've got an extract which I'm not going for. I'm scoring 1 in that round. And let's imagine they find the Kree core, and they've got 2 of theirs, then they're suddenly scoring 4, and I'm down 3. At what point am I going to get those 3 victory points back? And having, I think it's more important to plan out the shape of that and what that's going to look like over the course of the game. If you're not just playing a VP game, if you're going for an attrition-heavy game that's going to need VPs later, knowing when is it important. You know what, this character could go and get 1 more attack over there, but because of the state of the game right now, it's more important for them to go and sit on this secure.
Also, one conclusion you can draw from that is that if you're playing against an attrition list and you're in the lead on extracts, then one thing you can do is just save your extract holders for last, because then you're forcing, if the attrition player wants to grab extracts from you. He's forced to daze characters that have not yet activated, which will probably swing priority to you, which is very bad for him next round.
That's a great point.
I'm kind of curious about something. So I like to stick to the analogy. So we're doing like the 9 possible VPs. Assuming like the game is not very swingy, one person has 5, one person has 4, right? So after 2 rounds, I mean, so first of all, in theory, for the if the game is very conservative, the game should last 4 rounds. Were you disputing that in some way or
no?
Yep.
No.
We agree, and then so then let's say by like turn 2, it's like 10 to 8, and then maybe now you know things happen and you lose a character. You now are the guy in lead with 10. He loses something, like your character dies with the cube, because the cube's probably killing him anyway. And then now it's 14 to 13 on turn 3. Mm-hmm. So I'm just kind of curious, what is the knowledge you can get to like either, you can't, I mean, obviously you could argue that maybe at some point you'll see the maybe an extra point and maybe you could win on turn 3 with like a, like 5-5-6, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And obviously that would be amazing. But is that something you're really shooting for or not really? I think it kind of sounds
not
like you're
shooting for it, but yeah. I do keep an eye out, obviously, for easy points. But that sort of, it either presupposes a mistake from my opponent or lucky dice at somewhere.
Fair.
If there is an easy point to grab, for instance, let's say my opponent has left secure open and I haven't activated a long mover on my last activation for the round. Of course, I will grab the point and score 6 instead of 5. But that is not something that I'm banking on for my game plan, because I have to assume that my opponent won't just leave points for free for me to grab. Also, it's about scoring 5 is something that I think can be done with a reasonable amount of risk-taking. But going to 6 often means dazing another character or claiming a secure, which probably includes you spreading out more, rolling more dice, and there's just more room for failure. For a point, you will still be in a stable lead by the end of turn 3. And you don't actually have to score 5 points again. You actually can afford to lose 1 extract in round 4 and still take the win, because you will be at 19 and your opponent will only go to 17. There are some other more interesting combinations that swing more, and that there are some more conclusions to draw from, I think.
Yeah, give us an example of one of those.
Yes. For instance, let's say we play Gamma with hammers, and the opponent has special delivery She-Hulk, basically, or deception, or some way to get to grab 3 hammers easily. Assuming my own roster, which is an A-Force Wakanda roster, if I have priority and play go up against, say, deception, which is really good on hammers, I would then use special delivery to put She-Hulk and Angela together on one side to just grab that hammer and be within 2 of each other. Grab my own hammer and we'll be at 2-2 on hammers. And then I expect to, since 2 of my best characters are out of 1 flank, I will only score my home objective. So I would score 3 first turn and my opponent would score 5. So we're 3-5. Now, what needs to happen for me to turn this game around? Turns out, not a lot. I need to grab the middle and not grab any hammers. So for the next round, All I have to do is score my home objective and the middle, not lose any hammers, and we're 8-8. So a situation that looked rather bad has suddenly just come around with just one secure moving from one hand to the other. And also, I see, considering Gamma, I see very, very few situations where you actually have to go for the opponent's secure in order to win.
Yeah. Like,
that's an interesting one, because something like, I mean, the classic Wakanda Wave list, the best way to beat that list is to get it to go to round four. So there are some lists who are playing so heavy on the secure control element that they have essentially ignored the attrition, and they're often quite squishy and able to be taken down. So maybe some Guardians teams kind of play into this as well, where they want to run wide and they haven't got great characters in terms of durability, but they've got lots of them and they can dominate secures in the early game and hopefully build to an advantage they can ride to a win.
Thing is, so, if you have priority and play, let's say, Gamma Cubes or Gamma Spider Infected, or, well, the five extract scenarios, then all you need to do is grab the three extracts that you can. For instance, if you play Angela, it's very, very easy. You just grab, just move up once, grab the middle objective, move back to your home objective. It can be done. There are lots of other things that can do it in the game. For instance, pentagrams. You can do some Yankee X-Men teleporting to grab the middle cube and be safe. And then all you have to do is keep the three extracts on your side, score your home objective turn one, and then score your home objective and the middle turn two and turn three, and you will win by the end of turn three at exactly 16-11. You never have to go for the opponent's objective.
So something
that creates a situation where, for instance, a card like A-Force Assemble, which looks bad on paper because it really dictates where you need to be to get anything out of it, you will actually be playing the game with your entire team between the middle objective and your home objective. So actually,
well, that's the one that gives you the extra dice, or is that right?
So you can have like four characters clumped up easily and still score enough points to win the game after turn three.
Well, I was thinking the one that blocks you from being thrown seems solid if you just want to score and not move, and not even maybe want to hit the opponent. Maybe you don't even attack the opponent, just sit there, you know?
That is certainly a tool that helps you to score the middle turn two, probably, or maybe turn three. So there are obviously things you need to do to achieve this, but as soon as you know exactly what you need to do, then it's easier to spot mistakes by your opponent. And it's, at least for me, it helps me keep more calm during the game while evaluating various decisions and even identifying blows that I can take without it meaning anything. I can even bait the opponent with certain characters and be perfectly fine.
Often where you position a character can essentially stagger or completely activate a character. So if they're like, I'm going to put a character here, and if you attack them, that's an attack you're not taking against someone who's holding an extract or scoring a secure.
And I suppose this is quite difficult for the listeners to visualize, maybe. But another thing that often happens when I play this way is that, let's say I'm holding 3 out of 5 extracts, and I, for some reason, dace a character that is holding an extract, a cube, for instance. Do I pick it up? No. I put it as far away as possible from everything, so that my opponent, instead of getting a juicy target with two cubes on it, has to spend an action to grab his objective back, which will probably, or rob him of a double tap on my character, or he still takes the double tap, but then I can run with another character and pick up the cube that I made him drop earlier.
Yeah, which keeps you on your timeline for like a three-turn win or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's solid. I've definitely done that once where I like could throw someone. Like I had a Thor throw, and it was like the guaranteed 1 point of damage. And I could either choose to throw the character towards my team and then pick it up, or throw the character against a tree in the corner of the map and then put the objective even further after that. And at the time, I was like, well, of course I picked this up. And then I'm like, wait, I don't actually need this. Let's just put this thing in the farthest corner of the map. And at the time, my opponent's like, what the hell are you doing? And then I'm like, well, look at the board. Like, look how far your character would have to move like three moves just to go get this objective.
Yeah.
So
another thing, another funny scenario is Demons Downtown, that most players consider a dead scenario, at least in my experience. But the thing is that if you're playing Spider Infected, for instance, and you manage to and you have priority and then probably able to grab the middle spider and both of your home spiders, then all you need to do is keep those three spiders and score your home portal for four rounds, and you get to exactly 16 points, which is just as fast of a points win as a gamma wave.
So they would also score four, right? If they did,
yeah,
the two
all
middle.
You have to do is keep them away from the middle objective. Yeah, one
in four
time.
Turns.
At some point during the game. Okay.
Yeah, I like that actually. My last opponent was Mince, and I actually had to grab four spiders. I was just trying to hold the back one just to have it and stop, but he double move blocked that one, which made it more interesting.
He's overextended into your force. You're going to get
well, right? And then I could kill his character. He actually felt brutal, but because his character did a little bit of work, but it ended up, yeah, like it put him in a horrible position just to for the parody because of the four spiders. But so obviously, probably don't play Demons into someone who can retire team behind the last point, my point.
Yeah, sure, all right. in order to grab four spiders, he has to put a character very close to you.
No, I don't, because I can do the jump, move forward, pull it, grab it, run back, and I was behind, like line with the back line, because you do reaction. You're on deployment, you warp up, forward, back.
Is it the X-Men Angela? Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Angela, Beast. Beast,
yeah, okay.
Can do it with
But then yeah, sure. You're moving the mid spider back. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. And then the mid spider
just
to move
one,
up and
obviously.
Move back, yeah.
Another one that's really tough is playing Fisk and your opponent has hired muscle and you don't. And you have priority.
Yeah, it's good.
That one is basically impossible if your opponent doesn't do a serious mistake at a certain point.
Yeah, or if they activate wrong, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But they really can't do anything right if you're last. But even if you do have priority, you can still get them if one of the sides of the board is activated incorrectly.
Yeah. So it's, Or you manage power to of hired base muscle. all of his characters on one flank.
Yeah.
Which is basically what you go for. But even then, he can hired muscle and just with one single character who's been lurking bit away and just runs up, hired muscle, and grabs that point. And then you're all of a sudden you're 4 points behind by the end of turn two.
Yeah, I really like Wolverine for that role because he's immune to stun. He regenerates, and he's so tanky that, like, even if they try to, like, bully him or something, he's probably fine.
Yeah. The lesson to be learned is never let criminals choose secures when you have priority.
Yeah, for sure. It's true. I loved your example, though, about, throwing the token away from people. I love what you said about the demons and how you could do the 444 thing. That's pretty cool. Is there any other, like, really cool interactions or kind of pacing the game examples you have?
Lots. just having a hard time to pick one. Let's see here.
Well, a lot of it seems to be based on spiders, cubes. Is there any thing that doesn't include spiders and cubes?
Absolutely. There are some weird ones as well. For instance, Skrulls. I played a game the other week where my opponent was running a 9-point Thanos, a She-Hulk, and Okoye at 17 points. And I was playing 5-wide Wakanda with Panther, Shuri, Storm, Enchantress, Spider-Gwen. And he had hired muscle and easily grabbed the Skrull. So I just decided, okay, what I need to do here is to score 3 secures every round for the entire game, keep Enchantress within 2 moves of the Skrull agent holder, and then on the turn where it wins me the game, I'm gonna double move and Amora's Kiss the Skrull agent, and the turn that it wins me the game would be turn 5. Because if I score 3 for 4 turns, I'll be at 12. And it's when he has 3 characters and you have 5, it's actually not that hard to score 3 secures every turn. And also, if he failed to score his 4th secure at any point during the game, I would also gain the lead because it would be just 3-3-3-3-3-3 every turn. Mm. I didn't manage to get the Skrull agent. Instead, the game went to turn 6, where I managed to go to, 17-16 win. Because it was enough for me to score 2 on the last round, because he could only score 1 of his objectives.
And did you get the Skrull agent, or was it
never relevant? I never had the Skrull agent.
Wow.
So
I still call it.
So just deciding that, okay, I'm probably not getting it. Well, it's relevant to say that it was She-Hulk holding the Skrull agent and I played Wakanda. So I basically just realized, okay, I'm never getting the Skrull agent except by Amora's Kiss. And he will always have priority. So if I move up and try to grab it, She-Hulk will just maim Enchantress with priority on the next turn, so it has to be the very last turn if that's going to happen. But as long as I keep the 3 secures, it'll be an even pace. And also, he had to keep pretty far back because he was scared of Enchantress like moving once, Sirens calling him, She-Hulk to her, grabbing the objective and moving away. And then, setting up a Gwen lifesaver or something to steal his possibility to strike me. So she was basically unable to participate in the game. She was like out on one flank and hiding from Enchantress the whole time. Counterplays where Enchantress really, really excels. I can't overstate how good she is because what I've come to realize while doing this and calculating points on different crisis scenarios is that the extract is the key, because there's been a tendency for a long time that people think mostly of secures, because that's what dictates where characters will be on the board. I find it quite a lot more common that people choose secures when they get priority than extracts, save for hired muscle plays and the like. But as a matter of fact, it's actually the extracts that more often than not are what swings the game, because there's often an odd number of points in those, and there's often an even number of points in several secures.
Fair. I mean, it gets swingy when one character dies and then you steal their secure. But, it's kind of what comes to mind for me is Gamma, right? Gamma was like day one. Everyone knew Gamma, right? And then Gamma scored so many points that it sort of invalidated extracts to some extent, because you could, and it, kind of a tangent, but you mentioned Enchantress. You may have to, as your opponent, play around the fact that he's probably going to use Enchantress on you, so that might mean you have to go for like the Gamma home point to like compensate for the fact you're about to lose like a hammer or something. But then what's, I guess the point I'm getting to here is, when Demons came out, one of my first impression after playing it was, holy crap, this is different than Gamma, because now the focus is on extracts, which, like you said, was new to people. And, Gamma had this weird, because of the one damage thing, it created this, weird, King of the Hill Fortress scenario. And I noticed, with Demons, you could kind of play wherever the hell you wanted on the board. And maybe, kind of like you said, as long as you're holding, a quote-unquote home objective, it doesn't really matter where every other character you're playing is, right? Yeah. And so it gets really interesting. And that was definitely a culture shock for me to, have the... a map that or design that's like a mirror of Gamma yet plays completely different. And I do think that's a solid point. I think Gamma definitely can throw the math in weird ways. I mean, because if your opponent's just one sitting on that 3 points, then it gets weird.
One example of that is Montesi Formula, which is on paper a quite slow extract, but it's actually not. because, for instance, let's say you play Wakanda, and you're playing Wakanda Wave on Gamma, and it's Montesi Formula and Gamma Wave. Let's say you don't get the middle objective, the middle book. You just get your book, so you have one extract. Now, as long as you score your home objective and the middle objective, you will win by the end of turn 4, which is exactly as fast as Spider Infected.
I gotta wrap my head around that for a second. So
you will score turn 1.
You're playing Montesi, you said, and what was the other thing?
Montesi and Gamma.
Gamma, okay. Yeah. Oh, okay.
So, and I didn't hear that. Wakanda
is interesting.
Quite good at scoring the middle point reliably. Turn 1. You score 3+1, 3 on the secure, 1 on the extract. Same thing on turn 2, turn 3, turn 4, and that's going to be 16-12. Because your opponent will score 3 points every turn, because he's got his home objective and 2 books. And you score 4, because you have middle objective, home objective, and 1 book. Yes. Yeah. But as an example of how Gamma Wave can throw the math in weird ways, like Splush said.
No, I like that example, though, because people might think, oh, I'm playing Wakanda, so I have to play cubes or something. Where really, if you had priority and you had a reliable way to get that first book, and maybe you grab it with a fragile character, go up, run back somehow, and then can focus on just pushing people off the middle and scoring it, right?
Yeah. Like, it's the exact same thing on...
Yeah, the math gets interesting there.
Yeah. And it's the exact same thing on Extremis or Infinity Formula or any other of the 4-point secures. If you manage to grab the middle book, turn one, with an Angela or an X-Men teleport or a Pentagrams or whatever. All you have to do is score two secures and two books for every round. Four rounds, you win.
You know, that makes sense, because when I was doing the math for Jacob's example, you're overshooting your points.
Yeah. And so, that's what... That's
yeah, you what, just cut the yeah. the flat, the extra off, the fat.
Yeah. And then if you do score 4 points, if you're about to score 4 points, then you're just... you're not gaining anything by getting another point. Well, of course, you can grab it to get yourself like a safety margin if there's no cost to it at all. Like... getting closer to a dangerous brawly Thanos or something. Just don't take the risk, because if you score 5 points on one turn, you're still gonna need four turns to end the game. So you're not cutting anything short. You're just risking more. Right, so a very normal approach from Cabal players is that since you consider dacing a lot of characters as your main win conditioning, you're not caring that much if you go if you get behind, like you get if you're losing like 1 or 2 points in the early turns, because you're looking for a swing round where you like dace 2 or 3 characters on one round and then score like 5 or 6 points and take the lead. And that's more of a swing turn approach, if you know what I mean, which is something that you very often saw in War Machine, where you the feat turn, basically, where it's about you trying to engineer that really, really strong turn that swings the game in your favor and makes it and gives you such a big lead that your opponent can't recover.
Yeah, especially when your characters are dead, it's hard to recover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there are some seasons that play out like that. So something like you talked about with Citizen Evacuees and like Infinity Formula. Just so often it's, I'm going to move these guys here onto my side of my secures and pick up those things that are right next to them. You're going to move to your side and pick up your things. And just the first turn is we both score 4, and it's kind of predictable. And then it's about what's going on next in order to try and, I mean, maybe you're playing for the draw, but what are you going to do to try and get a VP over? How are you going to take away a secure? How are you going to take away an extract? Those are the things you're looking at.
Well, as long as you're carrying two secures and two extracts, all you need to do is deny 1 point from your opponent at 1 point during the game.
Yeah, you don't even have to score an extra point, right? No. You literally just have to make them not score 1 point.
Yeah.
It's complicated slightly by the evacuees. And
Your
plan might be for a draw and have priority.
There are, as I browsed over, there are some weird scenario combinations that are a bit hard to calculate, and panic grips the evacuees is one of them, because that is a scenario where weird things can happen. Because there might be, you might have a comfortable lead with like say 14-10 or something by turn 3, and then your opponent goes in and has a really lucky dice roll and daces a character holding a citizen, gets enough power to evacuate a citizen and then grab yours, and then all of a sudden that is a 6-point swing basically from one spike. So, and also when playing evacuees, you always have to keep check of your opponent's ability to pass you by evacuating his opponents at the right time. You can't really afford to. So you have to actually have to score, I have to correct myself, you actually have to score more than 4 per turn if you want to keep your opponent unavailable to win by evacuating on turn four.
Yeah, you mean if you don't have priority for the first action of round five?
Yeah. The first action of round four, I think.
Either way.
Yeah, yeah. It makes me think I probably could have done that in games in the past, and I never even thought of it.
Okay, let's say like this. Turn one, you both score four. Turn three, two, you both score four. That's 8-8. Turn three, you both score four. That's 12-12. So now, if your opponent has priority, he can immediately evacuate two citizens and win the game.
No, you can't do that in a single action.
You're right.
But he can do it first and second activation.
Yeah. First and second activation.
Activation, and you've only got one activation in.
That's true.
Unless you have them on like Corvus Proxima or you have Follow Me.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot that you had to do it during your activation. Yeah, that's true. But
that's actually.
But given that it's 12-12, you can still the point still stands.
Because is it possible you could do an Asgard roster where you purposely just play for 4-4-4 and then evac game? I mean, which they're already doing a more ridiculous version of that anyway, but.
Yeah, but thing is, though, do you actually need Hired Muscle to do that play then?
No, I mean, I'm just saying, like, even if Hired Muscle gets banned, it could be that someone breaks the math and is like, hey, I literally just have to control these 2 points and run around and get my power and I win.
Yeah.
And you've got the same thing that happened in my game where I'm going, well, if you want to stop me winning, you've got to leave some guys on your points and bring your guys to me. So you're wasting actions moving. You're going to have less high quality attack. And I'm going to have all of my people and all of my tech to respond to that. So yeah, just having priority in that situation feels really good. So yeah, having priority on, top tip. If you don't have priority and you don't have a good way of getting it, don't pick Panic Grips Evacuees as your extract, because it will make it really strong for your opponent. I mean, do you feel that that's one, maybe if you're playing this defensive VP style that you've described, do you feel that one's a bit swingier and maybe you just wouldn't take that if you're playing that style?
Well, I am not taking it. but the thing is that you have to. I think that it's a difficult matchup, a difficult crisis combination. But as long as I know what I need to do to avoid that situation that I just described, a 12-12 situation, early turn four, where your opponent can evacuate two citizens before you have the chance. So what you need to do then is to score one more point than your opponent for two turns, two out of the three beginning turns.
Yep. So then back on the first of your activations in round four and go to 16.
Yes, and also that would mean that your opponent would only be on 10 points, so he would have to evacuate three citizens to win.
That checks out too.
Yeah. So best way to go about it is if your opponent chooses panic, then make sure to choose a secure where you are advantaged to score a 3-1.
Or 4-0.
What about meteors?
Or 4-0.
Meteors you could deny 3-0, right?
Yeah.
So meteors is a pretty good counterpick.
Swingy, though, because it's hard to guarantee you scoring meteors every turn.
Yeah.
It's not that hard to guarantee, or not guarantee, obviously, you still have to play. And position and use your player skill, but this is about defining what needs to be done making yourself more effective.
You don't need to score meteors every turn, but you do need to score it like three of the four.
Yeah,
which is
I'm more talking meteors as like a counterpick. Like if your opponent seems to be kind of gaming the math on you. And you want to like throw like a wrench in the spokes? Maybe you're like, well, I'm just gonna take meteors then. Let's see if we can do meteors.
Yeah. If you play like meteors, spider infected, then you have priority. You actually only have to score the meteors two out of the four rounds.
Okay.
Yeah. Checks out
because that means 0 points on meteors turn one. Three points.
That gets
spiders.
Tricky though, because you still have to like stand on these meteors, and more likely things are dying in meteors, right?
Thing is that it doesn't
even the meteors can make you die from the rolls of skulls.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's don't underestimate not having priority.
Okay, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Where are you going with
that? It's a good thing, because if you have that means that you have a chance to swing a comet without your opponent being able to do anything about it. And that is often key.
That's a good point, especially if you're like, maybe you're playing a character like Storm who has 4 energy and you just kind of like wait till the end. And
or any character who has some sort of way of moving an enemy character off a point, like Valkyrie or Gwen or a lot of anyone out of a lot of characters.
That's interesting. Well, but your example
and it only
is
has to happen twice, as long as you can keep your extracts where they need
but
to be.
But you're kind of backing up my point though, because like, let's say your opponent's going to play Hired Muscle and play spiders. And again, you're trying to like mess with their heads by not having priority on meteors, as you know, you might be able to mess with them, right?
Yeah. Like by building a wider team so that you automatically lose priority after turn one.
Well, it's not so much that. I'm just saying that spiders is kind of a Hired Muscle thing. That's what I'm getting at, right? So if you're trying to deal with Hired Muscle, and the person won the priority role and picked spiders, you know they're picking. You're trying to think, like, well, how do I slow them down or whatever? Meteors is an interesting thought, is kind of what I'm getting at. And you wouldn't have priority, and theoretically your team, let's say, is the same. So in theory, you don't have priority in the game either. So am I see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, it would force you to score if your opponent would grab 4 spiders, and you only won, then you have to score meteors every round, and at one point, daze an enemy character holding a spider. You don't necessarily have to pick it up. You just have to make sure they don't score it.
Yeah.
But scoring the meteors 4 out of 4 rounds is going to be the tricky part there.
What if you can get 3 spiders, though? Then it's totally different, right? Because now you're getting 5 to their... like 5 to 3.
That you still need 4 rounds to win.
True. And maybe
then
you can
we're
afford
at the point
to
where
mess up once.
Then we're at the point where you need to score the meteors twice out of 4 rounds. And you can afford to lose 1 spider at one point.
You actually reminded me of something I was thinking about earlier when you were talking. Are we underappreciating a character like Black Widow, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., or what is her, Agent of whatever? What was her name?
Black Widow, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah.
Is it Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Okay. She gives you that, 1 VP, right? Is that something to think about? Like, are we undervaluing that 1 VP?
I think we might. I haven't started to doing calculations including her, but her scoring 1 VP at any time during the game might actually be kind of big. Just the same as Usurp the Throne and the Black Order leadership. And well, basically, I think this highlights, the defensive scoring approach highlights that anything that can give you VP outside of crises is really, really strong.
It's interesting.
It may 1 more point may effectively shorten the game with an entire round.
Well, okay. So sometimes Jacob and I will like sort of casually joke about like taking, well, for example, deception. Like theoretically, deception is like kind of a VP, theoretically, right? And so, like, yeah, I would take a card, a tactics card that gives me a VP, but it's kind of not a VP. It's like a minus for them, but not really a plus for you. Potentially, it could be a plus for you, but Widow is literally like gain +1 VP and limited variance requirements, right? Like you know, I've played a lot of Killmonger back in the day, and Killmonger can make you sad sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, Widow, she literally just has to be standing next to you. And obviously someone has to be dazed, not killed, because it doesn't work if they're dead, but daze someone and have her stand next to him. It seems pretty doable.
At every scenario, at every crisis combination where there are 9 points on the board, which means that every combination with cosmic cubes or spider infected and 4 secure points, she would shorten the game an entire round if she scores 1 VP at 1 point during the game.
Oh, maybe we're going to start a revolution right here, guys. Going to do it. The Agent Widow comeback. She went from second least popular character. Let's bring her up. I'm seriously going to have to think about this. This is interesting stuff.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to get Hugo on here, because it got me thinking, and we've done to even more stuff that I hadn't thought about. So I'm going to have to do some thinking as well. But it's just taking it back to basics, back to kind of the first principles of, like, how do I win the game? What is my path to getting 16 victory points or one more than my opponent at the end of round 4 or round 5 or round 6? How am I getting there? And having a plan and knowing what that plan looks like so you can make better choices during the game.
Exactly. I would say I probably exploited all of this just completely not knowing I'm doing it when I was playing Cabal back in the day. I would play to not lose for most turns. And then I would usually just rely on MODOK having 10 health and healing to do something ridiculous once, and then I would win. Yeah. And I never broke down the math. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who've like, oh, I've done that before. But to consciously do it is a whole nother level. And to consciously not play aggressively when you shouldn't be, or maybe your opponent is winning by a lot and they overly aggressive go for another VP that you know doesn't actually matter. It's kind of interesting as well, you know. They might be overscoring.
A lot of situations where I just sit and smile for myself when my opponent goes after the wrong character.
Hmm. That too. I got to mention
two in my a couple of things easier when he's doing things that's not getting him closer to stopping you from scoring what you want to score. Like extract with characters that your opponent is going to be wanting to kill anyway. Like it's a very good, because most opponents really want to kill Loki because he makes all the superpowers more expensive. But then you make sure not to put an extract on him and just watch your opponent waste tons of actions trying to take Loki out.
Yeah. Or you want someone to get attacked. I mean, you know, I know a lot of people have been like playing Black Dwarf more lately and just purposely wanting him to hold something because he's super tanky, you know? And I know when I play X-Men, I don't like giving Storm things because people just have this affinity for wanting to murder her all the time. And I hate to encourage them. I mean, you know, obviously sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. And she ends up holding things a lot because she hides maybe in the back. But in my mind, I'm always trying to think like, who else could do this? Because I really wouldn't want Storm to be doing this.
And also one psychological aspect to this that I might be destroying by saying this is that most opponents, a lot of players are not going to react too much to getting behind 1 or 2 points. So you're basically like stringing them along, thinking, letting them think that they're almost level, but in fact, everything is according to your plan.
So you're just waiting. Like, so for example, if you could use Enchantress to steal something on turn one or two, maybe you wait till the turn four or three or whatever when it actually matters.
Yeah.
That's a good thing solid,
also when playing against the new players, because it makes them not feel as crushed. they have no idea that they're being raffle stomped, but they feel like they're getting to play the game anyway.
Yeah. Hey man, that's smart. That's good thinking. Yeah, maybe for a turn or two, you're actually moving your characters kind of away and like making them think, oh well, he's not doing anything to me. I guess I'll just not move my characters. Not realizing that, like, you kind of have the win since turn one, but you don't actually execute it right away.
Mm-hmm.
It's solid. I don't know. Anything we miss? Any, like, super cool thing you want to throw out there? Or,
There are tons, but yeah. it would be a seven-hour show.
Yeah. I think we hit a lot of cool stuff already, man.
If anyone's interested in delving more into this, then they can just message me on Discord. A tip for anyone who wants to make their own spreadsheet like this, it's like, obviously there's gonna be variance between different rosters and what your turn one plays are, and like try to think how many points can you reliably score turn one and turn two, given what you have in your team, and then take it from there. How much do I need to score to win from there? Because there are, for instance, some plays like in my A-Force team, for instance, it's A-Force is really good at going to 3-1 on hammers turn one. Because if you have priority, you place Angela opposite one of them, and then Storm or Wasp and She-Hulk opposite the other. First activation, Angela moves up, grabs the hammer, moves back to some sort of secure objective or anything. Their next activation, unless they have their own Angela, which may, of course, very well be the case. But if they don't, they can choose to go up, grab their hammer, but then they're going to take She-Hulk to the face.
Yeah, and then it becomes a game if they're playing Angela to see who places their Angela first, right?
Yeah.
So that's where, yeah.
Fun thing you can do if you're facing off against that is to have a Corset Widow placed in the middle and double move her and grab their home hammer and then go, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to punch Widow with She-Hulk, who's sitting right there? Or are you going to drop her off over there and punch the one I'm going to send to pick up that hammer?
Yeah.
So try thinking
of the like box. Widow is going to die, but it will definitely screw with your opponent's plans.
Exactly. And she's a two threat model, and she's actually, you know, with martial artist, you know, three dice martial artist is no slouch.
She can definitely survive one punch, probably not two.
That's an interesting thought. You may be throwing her to the sheep and she gets murdered, but yeah, it leaves them maybe out of position. Maybe you're playing a more central secure and it just throws them off.
Yeah, and She-Hulk spending a turn in the backfield. I don't hate that. And if Wasp has to stay back there as well, then that's nine threat that you're tying up for like a round with your two threat character who's still not KO'd. So if they leave her alone, then she can do annoying things in the backfield. I think it's got some play. I think it's worth thinking about.
And there are several of other ways of achieving that. Like deception is one way of very effective way of getting three hammers turn one. Mm-hmm. Pentagrams is another. The X-Men teleport, maybe a third. There are, just consider what are your good turn one plays for getting ahead on extracts when you have priority. Or when you don't have priority. When you don't have priority, you can always advanced R&D Enchantress and double move her to grab one extract of your opponent if they don't place optimally.
Well, yeah, and if you're not one of these affiliations, don't play hammers. It's really popular, but maybe it shouldn't be.
I think Brotherhood's got some fun plays on hammers as well, but For the stuff that's in it, I haven't managed to take it all on board, and a lot of it was new to me. So I feel like I've learned a lot and got a lot of reflection and stuff to do. So Hugo, thank you so much for coming on and sharing.
Thank you. And I don't consider anyway. I think people become more aware of the dynamics of the game, then we're going to have better quality games all over the place.
Agreed.
Well, that wraps it up for this episode of The Danger Room. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something to level up your next game. You can reach out to us on our Discord, Twitter, or Facebook. The links will be in the description. We have a questions channel on our Discord, so feel free to drop us some questions in there and we'll answer them on the show. Thank you for taking the time and listening to us. If you're liking what you hear, leave a rating or comment, or even both. We appreciate any feedback to help us grow and become a better group to bring you the best quality content that we can. See you next time in the Danger Room.